Welcome to the CRA Resource Show. CRA Resources is a unique recruitment agency with a single focus of providing CRA staffing for clinical studies across North America. My name is Becky Clark, and I'm Senior Operations Manager at CRA Resources. Today, we are sitting down with Angela Roberts, Head of Recruiting, and special guest Lyle G. Lyle is President and Founder of G Farm Consulting, Inc. Before we get started, make sure to visit craresources.com/blog to catch up on our latest blog posts. You can also sign up there to get this content delivered to your inbox. So I will turn it over to Angela, and she can give us more details for our topic today.
Well, the last time that Lyle and I spoke, he mentioned that he would love to do a podcast on setting up a consulting business, kind of like the business side of setting up the business. And I love this idea because we are asked all the time about how to become a 1099, and while it isn't overly complicated, there are a lot of things to think about. So, Lyle, welcome back. So happy that you're here.
Thank you very much. I'm surprised y'all keep letting me in, but I'm very happy every time.
Our favorite podcaster.
Thank you, Lyle.
So, you know, we have an email that we actually sent out whenever people ask us this question, and it just kind of bullets out a lot of things that they need to think about. And we're a little careful because the disclaimer, we're not accountants, we're not lawyers, so we can't really get involved in some of those aspects because you do need to have legal advice a lot of times, and you mm-hmm. also need to have an accountant's advice, mm-hmm. you know, whenever you're doing this. But we can at least, you know, maybe point people to areas that they can start taking a look at it. So, but to begin with, what made you decide to go from permanent employee to consulting? What was that decision map for you? Yeah. And what are some of the things that you think people really need to consider if they're making that leap from one to the other?
Sure. So this is the way back machine, right, for me. I made the jump to consulting in 2007. And at that point, I'd been working in-house for a number of years in the industry. And I was looking at other opportunities, and it didn't look great at that time. So my company had left the San Diego area, the Elan Pharmaceuticals, which I don't think exists anymore. They might. But they were moving back to South San Francisco. And so I was like, no, you know, I don't want to move back. I don't want to go there. Remote work wasn't really an option at that time.
Wasn't a thing.
Yeah, it wasn't a thing, right? Unless you were a monitor. So, right. So for those kind of positions, you know, I was an in-house. I was a, you know, project manager, project lead, whatever. So I was like, well, what else can I do? You know, I want to be in industry. I don't want to leave San Diego. And so I talked to some very smart people. And again, I like your disclaimer. I am neither an accountant nor a lawyer, like at all. I just want to put that out there kind of again, right? Reinforce Lyle, not a lawyer, not an accountant. But I talked to some folks who had done that, some colleagues of mine. And I decided, you know what, this seems like a good time. You know, I was, I'm a single person. I was a single person back then too. So I felt like, on the one hand, there was less risk for dragging a family down with me. True. You know what I mean? On the other hand, I was like, well, I can be a little more nimble. I can be a little more, you know, I can be more risk tolerant at that point.
Right.
So, yeah. So that was kind of what precipitated it. And it was great. I was very fortunate in that when I started, I essentially had a contract in hand, more or less in hand, you know. So I didn't just get dropped off like a babe in the woods and be like, hey, here, go forth and find some work, Lyle, you know. So that was a very kind of fortunate circumstance. I did plan for that somewhat, you know, but at the same time, there was, like I said, a lot of fortune, a lot of luck and a lot of good folks that supported me. So, So that's a very long explanation as to why I went independent, you know, when I went to 1099. And I went to 1099 immediately because speaking to an accountant and speaking to a lawyer, less the lawyer, but speaking to an accountant, they're like, listen, in California, there is, so I live in San Diego, there is no reason for you to be a W-2 consultant, right? Okay. My accountant used to yell at me every time I took one of these. They're like, you know, every once in a while you'd get a consulting agreement and they're like, we want you to be W-2. Lyle, my accountant would scold me every frickin' time.
Well, so, the California laws are a bit weird about that now, aren't they? I mean, I know California
yes.
laws have always been employment weird,
yes.
but, you know, but
yes.
I think it's a lot worse now than it used to be.
It's that was the perception. However, for me, and maybe my accountant is, you know, whatever, but they, I had not ever had a situation come up where the new laws were negatively impactful for me. Mm-hmm. You have to be, I think what they did for me, and again, not a lawyer, what they did for my company was they, I had to be very clear with roles and responsibilities. And so that helped show why I was a consultant and not a full-time.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. Well, there are guidelines, aren't there? I mean, and yeah. And for those of you that are listening, companies have to follow the regulations whenever it comes to employment classifications and salaried versus non-salaried perm. And mm-hmm. consulting is a whole other gig, and you can't be an independent consultant unless you have freedom of schedule, and you have to come to the table with certain qualifications already. And right. you know, there's this whole host of things from an employment rules and regulations standpoint that are in place. And I know often that we're asked, can you do W-2 as well as 1099? And there are some clients that want us to hire employees and then farm them out as contractors. Yep. And yep. because there's co-employment laws and, you know, all of these things that companies have to navigate. So anyone that's considering becoming a 1099, what I will tell you is you really need to already know your business in order to set up a consulting business and legally be able to be a 1099. Because if you need to be trained how to be a CRA, technically, you shouldn't be an independent consultant, because if that's somebody right. has to train you on that basic skill, you should be an employee. And so we get that out of the way to begin with. So really what we're doing is we're talking to those of you that are tenured enough to be able to step out and be, quote unquote, independent.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. And I think, Angela, an additional point to that is, and this is just my perspective, right, that I think sometimes younger or inexperienced folks want to try and step into consulting. And I get it. Like there's a lot of benefits, mm-hmm. kind of work-life benefits to consulting, but, and this is maybe just old guy, you know, old guy yelling at a cloud, but I think that to be a competent, I think to be a competent consultant, you have to have a fair amount of experience.
I agree.
Right. You know, and for the reasons, the legal reasons you just mentioned, in addition, I think you're setting yourself up for failure. If you want to come in, you're like, I've monitored for 1 year and I know every damn thing there is to know about monitoring. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't.
I couldn't Sorry. Agree more.
Not to yeah. be that guy. I know I'm the old guy, right? I'm the crotchety old guy. I get that. But I don't mean to harsh people's dreams. But I do think another aspect of having some experience under your belt before you transition to consultancy is that you have a network. Because so many times, right? So many times I find that young consultants or people that come into it, they just think that jobs are going to fall out of the sky. And for a period of time, that was accurate, right? In our industry, that was kind of accurate. If you were a living, breathing CRA, you couldn't not work. But I think as we continue on, you know, certain trajectories, things like that, not to get socioeconomical, political economical about this, but I think that having that network, CRA resources is a fantastic example, to utilize, you will have a better opportunity. You'll have a better experience as a contractor, and you will be working more consistently. And I think that all kind of helps build your business, right? Versus getting very frustrated. I think a lot of consultancy businesses fail early on, right? A lot of people get very disillusioned, and I get that. So having that experience, having those connections, having that network, I think is very helpful for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Because it's about your brand as well. I agree. We get that a lot too. They work at IQVIA for like 2 years and now they've decided right. they want to be a consultant. And we tell them you need to hang somewhere else for a couple of years. You really need to get some diverse experience, diverse therapeutic, work with different companies so you have different experiences with the ways that, you know, different companies do things. Because as a consultant, you have to be able to go in with your sneakers strapped on, ready mm-hmm. to just learn the protocol and the SOPs and run with it. And if you don't have that diverse experience base, it's really very difficult to be able to do that.
That's such a good point. And I think that's an underlined point, right? Which is, as a consultant, I have on my CV, I don't know, 20 different indications that I can work in comfortably. So maybe 15, maybe I'm over, but it's a big number, right? It's a big right. number because I've been doing this a million years. But I think that that's a great point, is that as a consultant, you don't get time to figure out what's going on. When you get brought in as a consultant, in my experience, right, they're like, all right, Lyle, you seem like you know what you're doing. Fix these six things and go. Right. Right. Yeah. Or, right. I mean, it's not, all right, Lyle, there's a gentle ramp up and, you know, we'll give you some training and then we'll really hold your hand. They're like, no, dude, here you go. They throw you in the deep end of the pool. And if you sink, you sink. Right. Because it's,
and they don't
that's
pay
what
you
they need.
Train.
No, yeah, they're not paying.
Yeah,
you're not getting
paid
to train.
You don't get
paid
to take your GCP. No. You don't get paid to get your certifications for the ACRP.
You
don't
get
paid
all
to
that,
learn
man.
How to do oncology studies.
That's
you don't
what
get
I'm
paid
saying,
to do
right?
That stuff.
They're like, listen, if we wanted you to train to do these things, we'd hire you.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
We need you to fill this hole that's here right here, and you need to do it right now, and you need to be able, and I think another point, Angela, that I'd like to point out is that you need to be adaptable enough to drop into a lot of different organizations and their structure, right? If you've only come from one organization, not to pick on IQVIA, right? They're just the name they're top of mind name, but any organization, they have a set of standards and practices. They have a way of doing their work, right? And this is CRO, pharmaceuticals, whatever. As a consultant, you need to be able to pick up the different nuances of your sponsor immediately, right? You don't get a 2-week period. You don't get a month lead in. You don't get trained. No, no, none of that. None of that gentle slope bullshit. No, dude, like you got to go, right? They're like, here's your SOP packet, Lyle. Here's your protocols. Here's your IB. Get it out. Get out there. That's right. Right. And we'll see you on Tuesday in Connecticut. Right. Get her done. So which is it's a personality type, right? It takes a certain, I think, type of personality to be comfortable in that somewhat organized chaos, you know. And especially, and again, all companies hire differently with consultancy, right? Some are putting out fires, some are building new teams, some are seeding experience in inexperienced teams. But I think that with experience as a consultant, you can kind of get a sense for that as you're interviewing. You know, you can kind of be like, all right, what's the flavor of this thing? And kind of get your head right. But it's, having a fair amount of experience to fall back on, I think really helps new consultants succeed. You know, and also being realistic about themselves. I talked about me being a single person, right? What is your risk tolerance? What will happen if you don't work for 3 to 6 months, right?
Yeah, that was our like last podcast is how do you prepare for
I
that?
I was going to say, hey, there, callback. accidental callback, enough kind. But that's, you know, but these are all considerations to take into account when launching off into consultancy. And I'm not trying to dissuade people. I don't think, I loved it. You know, I've loved I will eventually, I think I'm soon to take an in-house job. So that's there's a little spoiler alert. We'll talk later. But I was consulted for it's been 18 years, right?
Yeah,
so,
it's been a minute.
I love it.
Sure. Yeah.
I love it. But I do, I think it takes personality type and you need to know that about yourself. You need to, or at least have an indication, have a thought, right? That you're okay being more, you know, less structured. You're okay living without the certainty of a lot of things that people take for granted in an FTE role. For me, it's exciting. You know, I'm an adrenaline junkie. I race cars, that kind of stuff. So it scratches my itches all over the place, but not everyone's built weird like I am.
Well, go ahead, Becky.
You first, Angela. Go
well, because I always said that I'm not a steady state girl. And whenever I work with IBM, they had me work in their transformation department. So I was a transformation executive and I had a team and we would parachute into troubled accounts and fix them. And I loved that because I wasn't running the day-to-day operations, right? I was going somewhere and fixing their problems, firing people, hiring people, doing all this stuff and then going to the next one and that type of thing. And I loved that. And so I think that that's one of the key things that consultants really have to think about is, are you looking for a forever home?
Yep.
Or are you really like being able to go in and do stuff, you know, and it doesn't have to be SWAT all the time, but, you know, consultants very rarely see the very beginning and the very end of a project.
I was describing this to a friend of mine, right, who's not in the industry, but who's a healthcare person. And I'm like, think about consultancy as kind of being an ED doc, right, or an ED healthcare practitioner. You don't see the beginning. You don't see the end. You fix what's broke. Right. You fix what's broken. You get hopefully in a better trajectory. So, right. To your point, if you want to see a soup to nuts start to finish, you'll very rarely get those opportunities. They exist, but they're not common in my experience. So it's, you know, but do you like to fix? I'm a classic fixer. Right. I love to fix stuff. I like to troubleshoot. It scratches my itches. And so dropping in a consultant role. Yeah, it's been great. been great.
Yeah. And from a consistency perspective and a risk perspective, we've touched on this in previous team roundtable recordings about how it really depends on the company rather than contract versus perm, especially in unstable markets or things that have been a little slow for contracts. And when you have a lot of acquisitions, sometimes the perm folks are the first to get let go because the overhead, there's all the benefits, there's all the extra stuff that the company has to pay for that they don't have to with contractors. So it can kind of be risky depending on, you know, the health and longevity of the company is really where you want to focus. Like if you want a long-term home, research companies that have been around forever, that are not on the chopping block, that have had a lot of stability. And then think of it, if you're going into a contractor situation, think of it like you're on their bench. You know, they'll call you, they've got something, they maybe need you to do IMVs for a while. And then that study's done. And then maybe it's a couple months, but they know you're great. And then they call you back and they say, hey, we want to rehire. We've seen this many times. They've worked with our clients. And then, you know, that study's over. But then 6 months later, they're like, oh, we remember so-and-so did a really good job. Can you see if they're available for this next contract? You know, so you can get kind of a long-term relationship with really good quality, stable clients, even if you're a contractor. And then if you're a little bit younger and newer, we've seen from the client side, if they're a lot of times more sponsors, small to medium size, who want to bring in people who are a little bit less experienced because they want to groom them in their SOP, like their processes. They want them to be that nurtured, you know, with their team. So right. They can, they don't want them to be too seasoned because then they're not as flexible, right?
Why are you looking at me?
I don't do
Windows housekeepers, exactly, yeah. To Angela's point. So sometimes, you know, those perm situations are really good if you're wanting more experience, like directly with the sponsor. If you've only been with Icon or whoever it is for a couple years, you want some experience directly with the sponsor, learn how they do things in that environment. But you can also have a good amount of stability if you have, to your point, Lyle, good network, and you get on the bench for a sponsor or CRO, and you do really good work, and often they will keep you occupied for a number of years.
And I want to extend this point, Becky, because I think that's incredible. As a contractor, every job is a job interview, right?
Yeah.
Every position is an interview for your next job. So mm-hmm. I think that is, you know, there's, and sometimes in-house, you know, people can quote unquote hide, right? As a contractor, you don't get to hide, right? You do not get to hide, and your reputation is your business model. So right. To your point, Becky, like you can come in, you impress as a contractor, you impress an organization, you impress a staffing firm or whatever. Yeah, that's right, right? Because we, as a person who is a known quantity to a staffing firm, it de-risks it for you guys, right? Potentially. So not only is it from the sponsors, but it can be from the staffing agencies as well. It kind of de-risks. Well, this Lyle, yeah, you know, he's a crazy person. We don't hire him anymore, right? But he's a lunatic. But, you know, you have a person that, to your point, right? Every time you're out there, you're showing, you have to show your worth. You kind of have to bring your A game. The consequence of that, though, is that if you build a positive reputation, agencies, sponsors will ask for you. And I honestly think it's easier, and I'd love to hear your guys' feedback on this from your side. From my perspective, it seems easier to build your reputation as a contractor in some cases than it does as an FTE. Is that at all accurate to what you guys have seen, or am I talking out of my, you know?
I think so. And the reason why I do is because consultants are looked at differently because they watch their purse strings with contractors because you bill per hour usually or per visit, and you're expected to do a certain number of deliverables. And if you bill 20 hours for a report, then to write a report, then they think you've got crazy on your face, or you're incompetent, right, or you're screwing them over or something like that. And so it's very easy to lose your brand very quickly as well, because there's a lot of scrutiny on it. But it's also very simple to wow them because you're efficient and you're effective, and you're not going to bill them for nonsense. You're going to bill them for quality. And I think that makes a difference. We've had contractors that will want to bill us to just log in to see if there's an email. And I'm like, no, You bill me for responding to emails, but you don't bill me to go look to see if you've got one, right? And so there's that whole different aspect of it to where I'm not going to pay you to set up your office. I'm not going to pay you to go to Office Depot to buy paper. I'm not going to pay you. So there's, you know, there's that a little bit of thing to where as a consultant, you really can only bill for the things that you're doing that provide value. And as a perm, there's a lot of things that you get paid to do that don't really provide any value. Right. You know what I mean?
So, going to get coffee 27 times, right? That's still on the clock.
On the flip side for that, if you're a consultant, often depending on how you set up your taxes and all of that, you can write off the paper. You can write off on your taxes
the
printer, your home office, expenses, blah, blah, blah. So there's a lot of little details and particulars. I don't know if we want to kind of pivot a little bit to that, give them a flavor for what to expect from a logistical standpoint. Stay tuned for part two as we continue our discussion with Lyle G about the business of consulting.